I'm pretty sure that I just came in and there were a lot of police there, and I was like, what? What is going on? I mean, you know, we had the police that worked there, but I was really confused.
We have no idea how much money or what was taken out of those boxes, because no one knew what was in them except the people that had rented them.
In April 1974, a group of thieves tunneled beneath Roswell Street in Marietta, Georgia, and blasted their way into the Cobb Exchange Bank vault, only to be mocked for escaping with just $1,000. But as investigators dug deeper, they uncovered a far bigger mystery, and the story of a career bank robber whose daring heists and prison escapes made him a legend. This is Robbery, Inc., from Georgia Public Broadcasting and the Marietta Daily Journal. When Lou Abernathy reported for her 8 a.m. shift at the Cobb Exchange Bank on Monday, April 22nd, 1974, she immediately knew something was wrong. As assistant cashier, it was Lou's job to open the vault before banking hours began at 9 a.m. in preparation for the morning rush of customers that would soon fill the lobby. She and Officer Don Ellers, the security guard on duty, were the first to arrive that morning. It didn't concern Lou that the vault didn't open when she first tried her combination. After all, the vault was equipped with a time lock. There was no way in or out of the strong room, even with the right combination, until the preset time on the mechanism had passed. If the closing shift at the bank on Saturday was late to close the vault, or even scheduled its closure a few minutes past, it would still open within a few minutes. But what troubled Lou was the smell. The fumes emitting from behind the wall of steel and concrete were strange and pungent. There was a metallic air to it, like electrical wires burning, but no smoke. After 10 minutes, Lou tried her combination again. The vault door swung open. Inside, it looked and smelled like a bomb had gone off in the entryway of the strong room. A sizable hole gaped open in the bottom of the 20-inch thick concrete floor, surrounded by debris. An opening twice its size mirrored back where the floor had blown up and into the ceiling. A bank cart lay on its side in a twisted metal heap, a casualty from the blast. The green bank bags it had been filled with from late deposits that Saturday were gone. They had been robbed.
The dangest thing we'd ever seen. It was unreal.
When you are in a small town, you have no idea what is really going on, because either they tell you or they don't tell you. And so this is just one of those, nope, didn't know that.
They never wanted to hurt nobody. We just wanted to help people that needed stuff. You know, it was like Robin Hood.
Come up, went up under the bank building, came up in the middle of that vault, dynamite, and blew a hole in the floor and came up that way.
Who was the last great outlaw? It's a question you might not think about much these days. What with elections, wars, pandemics, and so on at the forefront of your mind. I mean, aside from scammers trying to steal your banking information via email and hackers targeting crypto wallets, when was the last time you had to think about a bank robber? I'll ask it again, because I think you'll want to know the answer. Who was the last great outlaw? You might be thinking, Bonnie and Clyde, Jesse James, Billy the Kid. These would all be great answers. John Dillinger, if you really knew your stuff. But what if I told you the last great outlaw was a man you've never heard of? That can't be possible, right? Surely you've heard about the man who knocked over at least 3 dozen banks across the country. The criminal who escaped prison successfully 3 times, with several more brazen attempts. the mastermind who ran a criminal organization of more than 100 people committing thousands of robberies to steal nearly $1 million in the early 60s by the time he was 24 years old. The hardened robber who appeared on the FBI's top 10 most wanted. The legend who taunted federal judges with Christmas cards while he was on the lam. I'd bet money you haven't. Before we dive deep into this tale of gunslingers, master thieves, and lawmen, I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Madison Elizabeth Hogan, and you're listening to Robbery, Inc., Episode 1, An Explosive Story. I'll be your guide as we explore this mystery together. I've been a journalist for more than a decade, covering everything from entertainment, lifestyle, government, and technology to, you guessed it, crime. But most importantly, for this story at least, I grew up in what was once a sleepy little town called Marietta, Georgia.
For years, when somebody, where are you from? I would say 20 miles north of Atlanta. And just the fact, I have not adjusted to the fact that people know where Marietta is. Because it was, I mean, like my paternal grandparents lived in Smyrna, and that was a drive to go to Smyrna. It was like, oh, we're going to Smyrna for dinner. So it was not just get in the car and drive. And just the fact that the Braves Stadium is there, it just boggles my mind.
That's Peggy Crow, a Marietta native like myself, who now resides in Asheville, North Carolina. If you're not familiar with the Atlanta suburbs, Marietta is a historic town located northwest of the metro area. About 15 miles as the crow flies, as us Southerners like to say. It's home to the iconic Marietta Square at its heart, Civil War landmarks, the Gone with the Wind Museum, the KFC Big Chicken, and one of the largest populations in Atlanta's suburban sprawl. Peggy is someone we locals might call an OM, which stands for Old Marietan. It's a term of endearment, respect, and acknowledgement for families and generations that lived in Marietta before the great mid-century population booms and migrations. Some of these families have been here for nearly a century.
If you moved to Marietta, you weren't Old Marietta. You had to have been born there. Your family had to be from there. You have pretty much had to have multiple generations there. It was a club that we were... that we were proud to be part of it, but it's, you know, everybody just calls it OM.
I was working as a lifestyle and magazine editor for the Marietta Daily Journal in 2021 when I first heard about this story. This tale we're about to dive into will be told to you through voices of real-life eyewitnesses like Peggy, police transcripts and news archives, as well as a few actor portrayals to stand in for those who are no longer here. At the end of our story, after you've reviewed the evidence and come to your own conclusions, you'll be able to answer that question. Who was the last great outlaw? It's April 22nd, 1974. Barbara Walters makes history as the first female co-anchor on the Today Show.
I'm Barbara Walters with Jim Hart.
Good morning.
A milestone for gender equality in journalism. Richard Nixon is still in the White House.
So tonight, the great silent majority of my fellow Americans, I ask for your support.
But will resign in 4 months under the pressure of the Watergate scandal. The Sound of Philadelphia is the number one hit in America, with Elton John's Benny and the Jets close behind. Tornadoes have ravaged the Midwest over the past few weeks.
Now, I would guess 200 homes out here have the at least the second floor gone. Many of them are completely demolished.
And it's about a year before the fall of Saigon and the U.S. exit from the Vietnam War.
In the jungles, mountains, and river valleys of South Vietnam, the bloody insurrection does not pause, except in ambush.
But in the small town of Marietta, Georgia, there is a wide hole in the middle of a bank vault. Lou Abernathy had called the police. The exterior and interior of the Cobb Exchange Bank was swarming with Marietta police officers, reporters, and FBI agents from the Atlanta office. Rupert Raines, a captain at the time, was one of the first officers on the scene that day.
we get a call. I mean, they open up the bank, and they find, after they opened up the vault, I think it was on a timer, and when it opened up, they saw all of this stuff that was broken into and seen where somebody had come up through the floor inside the vault.
Rupert would go on to become the assistant chief of the Merida Police Department and the son-in-law of Ernest Sanders, who was the chief of police in the 50s and 60s. He passed away in August 2024 at 86 years old, but I had the pleasure of speaking to this OM about his memories of the burglary.
And it was in the part where they have the vault. They could not get back to where the money was, the big money was, in the bank, because it had a separate door, and it was secured, and it was locked. And they either got lucky and come up in the side that they wanted to, or that they missed the side that they wanted to go into. That I don't know.
Debris of concrete, ceiling, and dirt littered the inside of the vault. Police discovered a 135-foot tunnel that ran from the interior of the safety deposit room under Roswell Street, one of the busiest roads in the city. More than 2 feet by 2 feet and square in shape, the tunnel was shorn up the sides with wooden planks and connected the vault to the basement of the Cobb County Emergency Aid Building that sat across the road from the bank.
After I went in there and we all looked around to see if we could see anything, you know, we was going through the debris inside to see if there was any kind of explosive residue that they might have, but they didn't. They drilled through it, and so there was not a lot of evidence that you could collect, I don't think, inside that vault. I don't think they had a lot of physical evidence other than that tunnel. And of course, they traced down as to who rented the building across the street. Well, they had to be pretty smart to dig all the way under. They had rented a place across the street, and it was a business building. It's still there, and they rented a room. They tunneled under the street, and they had that two by fours bracing it all the way through. And they had a little trolley that they would put the dirt on and move it back. And that room across the street was filled to the ceiling with dirt where they'd come out of that tunnel that they dug. And the people at the rented the other part of the building never saw anything or never heard anything or didn't see anybody. They didn't even know it had probably been rented. I don't know. But that's how it was.
Within a matter of hours, police had discovered that three men under aliases had rented a space out of the basement of the Cobb County Emergency Aid Building. The landlord was Arthur Crow, a prominent attorney who owned several properties and parcels throughout Marietta. Arthur passed away in 2009, but his daughter Peggy recalled the burglary easily. Not only did her father own the building the thieves had rented, but Peggy worked a part-time job as a teller at the Cobb Exchange Bank.
I'm pretty sure that I just came in and there were a lot of police there, and I was like, what is going on? I mean, you know, we had the police that worked there, but I was really confused. I had no idea. I was just kind of thrown off.
When you first heard that somebody had actually tunneled under the road, like, what were some of your thoughts?
You know, I don't think that I thought right away about Daddy's building over there, because like I said, he owned multiple properties, so it wasn't top of mind.
The three men had rented the space from Arthur Crow for at least 2 months under the guise of opening a hair salon. Instead of wash basins, beauty chairs, and cutting stations at the shop, police discovered mounds of dirt, tools, money bags from the Cobb Exchange, and, funny enough, an empty bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. At least two rooms and a third partially were packed full to the ceiling with cardboard boxes of dirt from the tunnel. The men and the vehicles they had been seen with over the last few weeks were nowhere to be found.
you know, this is horrible to say, but we thought it was funny. We just thought it was funny. You know, because it's like, who's going to dig in and put a bunch of dirt downstairs? We're like, they're pretty creative. I mean, so we had to give them kudos for being pretty creative.
While Arthur and Peggy's relationship to the crime seemed suspicious to police at first, they quickly ruled out the father and daughter duo.
Well, I mean, if you think about obvious people who would be involved, I mean, it's kind of like you have a father on one side and a daughter on the other side. And I've been working there for a while, so it wasn't like I was a new hire. So, you know, it would make sense logically.
The buzz around town was that of astonishment and, as Peggy said, amusement. Tom O'Neill, a staff writer at the Meredith Daily Journal, would be the first to coin the crime as the Mission Impossible burglary in the front page story printed that day. Here's a clip of the original story.
In a daring, complicated Mission Impossible type scheme, a trio of burglars tunnel their way under Cobb Exchange Bank on Roswell Street in Marietta and blasted through the concrete floor of the safe deposit vault over the weekend, making off with what must have been a disappointing haul. The burglars entered the bank sometime early Monday morning and escaped with half a dozen deposit bags, reportedly containing less than $1,000 in cash.
That's right. After nearly 2 months of work, the would-be criminal masterminds had only made off with about a grand. In today's terms with inflation, that's about $6,500 and some change. However, the thieves had also paid Arthur Crowe roughly $500 a month for the rental space, meaning they broke about even. I want you to pay close attention to the next few lines of Tom O'Neill's story. As any good journalist knows, the devil's in the details.
According to Captain W.R. Raines of the Marietta Police Department, the burglars did not tamper with the safety deposit boxes in the vault. Instead, they made off only with the cash receipts from late deposits made Saturday. Captain Raines indicated the total cash haul was less than $1,000.
We all know the saying, the punishment should fit the crime. But shouldn't the reward also fit the crime? Digging a tunnel of that size was no weekend project. Right off the bat, police knew the burglars had been working on this tunnel for nearly the full length of their lease. Was this just an error of judgment? A miscalculation of where to come up in the bank or how much money would be in those bags? And did you notice who Tom O'Neill quoted in his story? That's right, Rupert Raines. Let's go back to Rupert.
They had knocked the doors off of everybody's box that they had rented. And we have no idea how much money or what was taken out of those boxes because no one knew what was in them except the people that had rented them, and no one else knew it. And the detectives come out, and it was, like I say, it was George Kelly and I think Ray Owens and Bill Elliott. They was investigating it. And so I never did, being a patrol, on patrol, I never did get much involved in the latter part of it. I understand that the guys that did it was caught in Tennessee, but was never prosecuted for some unknown reason. I don't know why, because that wasn't in my field. I was in charge of the uniform division, and Bill Elliott was in charge of the plainclothes officers, detectives, or whatever. That would have been the furthest thing from my mind is somebody tunneling under that road and coming up inside the bank and exactly where to come up. You know, that's they spent a lot of time doing it, but I think they probably reaped their rewards. I mean, there's no telling what all was in those boxes.
There it is, a contradiction. This is where our story really begins. How much money did these burglars really make off with? Who were they? How did they know where to come up in the bank? What was in those safety deposit boxes? And maybe most importantly, who could think of such a daring plot as to tunnel for months into a bank vault? Well, you're about to find out. Coming up on this season of Robbery, Inc.
Policemen made the cases, investigated them, and then brought them to the DA. And, of course, no case was ever brought to me on this case. And I frankly found out more about it since we started talking about it than I knew at the time.
Well, let's put it this way. When people say, is Arthur Crowe your father? I say it depends on who's asking.
One of the men accused of digging a tunnel to burglarize Marietta's Cobb Exchange Bank in 1974 has been placed on the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
He went to the bank and to borrow $32,000 to buy it, and they wouldn't give it to him. So he went back the next day, and he told him that he was there to rob him for $32,000.
Robbery, Inc. is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting and the Marietta Daily Journal. Robbery, Inc. is written and hosted by Madison Elizabeth Hogan. I'm on Instagram at Madison Elizabeth Hogan. This podcast was produced and edited by GPB's podcast team of Jeremy Powell, Jake Cook, and Mark Davenport. Special thanks to Olivia Watkin, Jaden Henson, and Rachel Kellogg.